Sophie, and you're listening to Heartstock Radio. We're back, and I'm so happy that you're here and that you're listening. Once again this evening, we're going to be talking with Cassandra Washington, and when we return in just a moment, she's going to tell you who she is and what she does. Also, about 15-minute marker, about halfway through the program, we're going to be taking your calls, and we'd love to hear from you, and so would Cassandra. The call-in number is 406-533-5785. This is Heartstock Radio. I'm Carol Murphy, and we'll be back in just a moment, and we'll hear from Cassandra and all the great things that she has to share with us.
Let an endless skyway, a soul below me, that golden banner, this land was made for you and me. I roamed and rambled, and I followed my footsteps to the sparkling sand of a diamond dance, and all around me a voice was sounding.
Thanks so much for tuning in. This is Heartstock Radio. Today we're going to be talking about gender and racial equality. Cassandra Washington is with us, and this is the second time that we've interviewed and talked with Cassandra. We just felt like there were so many topics that we didn't get to touch on last time that were really, really important. So, Cassandra, tell our listeners who you are and what you do.
Well, thank you so much, Carol. I am a personal growth champion. I'm a personal growth champion. So I work in corporate training and development, and I also work with private individual clients. I do leadership coaching and personal life coaching. And I work with clients privately in small groups. I go into different organizations and do coaching and training around leadership and communication and helping people develop the skills and the confidence to live out their purpose. And I love it.
I know that you do. And that's a beautiful thing. So in about 15 minutes, we're going to open the phone lines once again. And our number is 406-533-5785. And we would love for you to call and speak with us and ask Cassandra your questions. So on the issues of racial and gender equality, I'd like our viewers to know, first of all, why it is that you feel like you can speak on this issue with such authority.
Such authority. Mm-hmm. Wow. So, well, I am racially diverse, and I think that's part of it. But for the last, I think since the early 90s, I've been involved in diversity initiatives. And so in corporate, I facilitate conversations around our differences so that we have better understanding of one another, so that it brings us together, so that it expands our perspective, and so that we can create solutions that serve all of us. And so that's been more than 20 years, I guess, that I've been working in the diversity and inclusion realm inside corporate. So I think I do have, you know, a perspective that, and also my own personal experience, I think, gives me a perspective and gives me authority, at least on my experience, right?
Definitely. And I like to think that diversity is really something that is very necessary because it adds strength in so many ways. And we're going to talk about that some more too. But what was it about your personal experience growing up and coming into the fullness of who you are that made you want to tackle this issue or to be front and center with it?
Yeah, you know, I don't know that I thought that growing up, right? But I think in corporate, I didn't necessarily want to be the historian and understanding it from that perspective, but I do want to be skilled in facilitating conversations about race, about gender, about our differences in a way that, like I said, expands our point of view if we choose to allow that to happen, and so that we can make different choices in our world. I think it's so relevant right now. We're watching, not only we're watching different news, we're not talking to each other. And I think that's the biggest problem, is we're not talking to each other. I grew up in a really small town in Oklahoma. I measured the size of a town by the number of McDonald's they had. We had one. and how many Walmarts they had. We had no Walmart. So I grew up in a really small town. And the black side of town was on the south side of South Avenue. You know, we didn't have, we weren't separated by railroad tracks. We were separated by a street. And further south, there were the Native Americans who lived on reservations. And so I'd say living in a segregated town certainly gave me a different point of view, a different experience, and shaped the way I see the world. And also, I think my interest in school, I love learning. I love school. That's why I'm a personal growth champion. I engaged in several extracurricular activities, creative writing, drama, debate, cheerleading, pageants. And that put me in groups where I was the minority. You know, I was in groups, people that were mostly different than me. And so I got pretty comfortable being the minority. I learned quite a bit about the majority group. And unfortunately, the majority group didn't learn much about me, because I was only asked to assimilate into the dominant culture. So I think that certainly that experience growing up has shaped me and made me passionate about facilitating conversations across gender and racial differences.
So at what point in your life did you realize that just by virtue of the fact that we're talking and we're communicating, that can make that divide better?
I think it's my own personal experience, because we see the world the way we are. We don't stop and question that. And so growing up, as I got older and I'm observing the world, I meet people who are different than me, and they respond differently than I do. They've had different experiences and they see the world different. They have a different perspective. And I often say this in the class, like, not everyone is like you. And you're not like everyone, and that's absolutely okay. And that's a point of acceptance, right? Like, that's okay that you're different than I am and I'm different than you. It took me a little while to get to that acceptance. But it was through observation and having conversations and asking uncomfortable, sometimes risky questions that my perspective began to open up, so that I could have a different worldview and make different decisions.
So was that something that you experienced younger in life, or did that come along later as a professional woman?
I think being able to articulate it now, it's probably became later, you know, and I work in personal and professional development. And so that also gives me that kind of experience where I have challenged myself in those areas. I think that, you know, people that don't work in that field may not have that opportunity. So again, that's why I like taking that conversation to people. It's fascinating to watch people listen to a person who's had a different perspective and open up to this new way of seeing things. Like, oh, wow. You know, I had a friend in college that I met. She was from Togo, West Africa. And I learned a lot about different cultures through their food. And she would cook for me and, you know, some traditional meals. And I had a lot of questions, because it didn't look like the type of food that was on my mom's table growing up. And a couple of things. She taught me a lot, because my limited knowledge of Africa was what I read in the textbooks growing up, which was maybe a paragraph or two on slavery, and in the books of National Geographic, you know. So I thought Africans, people in Africa, lived in a bush, had plates in their mouth, long earlobes, and were poor. And then I meet this girl in college from Togo, West Africa, and she doesn't match any of that. She challenged everything I thought and helped me expand. And so until we tend to like people that are like us and associate with people that are like us. And until we put ourselves in positions where we interact and get to know people unlike us, do we have this opportunity to expand our point of view?
Yes, and it's funny that you mentioned food, because I like to think that culturally, when you get to experience other cultures' food, it's like opening the heart in some way. I can't even really describe it very well, but it's so funny that you brought up the whole food issue, because it's one of the funnest things about learning about other cultures who are completely different and like you said, so different than even what our preconceived ideas of them are. And so this is an interesting topic, because you mentioned your mom's table and how you grew up. Can you talk a little bit about that? And do you feel like the way that you were raised as a young up-and-coming Black woman, do you feel like you were raised in a way that led you to be so empowered, or did that come later on? What kind of advice can we give young girls, I guess, is where I'm really leading to with this.
Yeah, so I have an amazing mom. She's here in Dallas visiting me for her birthday. She'll be 80 this year, so I'm really blessed to have her. She was very encouraging and supportive, although she encouraged me to pursue things that she didn't have, that were not an opportunity for her, but she was very encouraging. So I think, you know, that encouragement, that empowerment, I was lucky to have growing up at a young age. And I think my mom, my family, saw education as a way to rise above the oppression that they had experienced. And so I was raised to think that I could achieve almost anything I wanted. But it was also clear to me that the obstacles of racism and prejudice and discrimination based on my skin color were very real, right? So I was encouraged to pursue all that I wanted, but I was also reminded of the real obstacles that I might face. So I think it made me stronger as a Black woman. And I thought, you know, I think that's positive. You know, it's almost like training as a runner, training uphill. It makes you stronger than those who train on a level surface. But I also think it has some drawbacks, you know.
Yes, and you know, one of the things that really comes to my mind is when you know that those obstacles are real, and I'm sure there were plenty of instances growing up where the reality of that was brought home, how do you bring children up in a way that they don't become defeated by that and see it for what it is, but yet are willing to push back against that and really be in and live in their own power and strength?
Yeah, how do you do that?
how did your family do that for you, I guess is the real question.
You know, it's really, I don't know that there's another option, right? Like, you know the obstacles are real. And so you either keep pressing forward and training uphill, or you stop. And that's not an option, right? That's not an option. And so one of the things that I would, you know, encourage young people to do is, and it's the thing that I encourage people to do today as a coach, I have a membership community called One Degree Shift. And the main focus of that community is people who want to make a difference to be surrounded by support and encouragement and people that are like-minded that will help you keep pressing towards your dreams and your goals. And I think that's important for young people, people of color, all people, right? That they have that community that is going to encourage them and support them. I had an experience in the eighth grade. It was the first year I could try out for cheerleader, and I had me and another friend wanted to do that. And so I worked really hard. This is my memory. I was asking my mom about that earlier this morning, but I worked really hard. I remember training in the house, training at my neighbors, getting help from my cousin at her house, and really working out. And so I didn't make the team. I didn't get selected. And my community rose up because they felt like there should be people of color on the cheerleading squad to root for. The majority of the football players who were starting were minorities. I don't remember the whole details. I remember in the eighth grade, not making the team, being disappointed, and having worked really, really hard to get there, having a lot of encouragement too. They actually put me on the squad. And so the way they did that, they selected 12 girls. I think I came in 14th place. So in order to have me on the squad, they had to expand the squad, and they got 14 cheerleaders. But when you work really hard for something, you don't get it, and then you're put on. There was just this underlying thought that, am I good enough? Mm-hmm. And each year I made cheerleading for the next 4 years, but I worked really, really hard, and I felt like I had to be twice as good as the other ones. I had to prove that I deserved, or that I was worthy. I had to prove that I belonged there. And that, I think that's the downside of the fight, right, of the training uphill, is that you have this, even though you can be encouraged and supported and feel confident, you have this, am I worthy, that I have to prove that I'm worthy. That's the downside. It's exhausting, too.
Well, it was interesting because what you are saying resonates very strongly with what Sonovia Han, one of our previous guests, also said, is that as a woman, you will be maybe challenged in certain situations, and there'll be kind of a poking and a prodding and a testing to see, does she really know her stuff? Is she really good enough? So as women, I think we tend to also have that same complex, for lack of a better word, also is like, I really have to know my stuff. I really have to rise to the top to prove that, yes, in fact, I am good enough and I do deserve to be here. But
exactly.
Exhausting.
It is exhausting.
Yes. So once again, our call-in number is 406-533-5785. We're going to take a quick music break. Be right back. Thanks for listening.
Oh, when the sun came shining and I was strolling and the wheat fields waving and the dust clouds rolling, as the fog was lifting, a voice was chanting, this land was made for you and me. And as I went walking, I saw a sign there, and on the sign it said no trespassing, but on the other side in the shadow of the steeple, I saw my people by the relief forfeits. I see my people as they stood there hungry. I stood there asking, is this land made for you and me? Or nobody living?
Hi. Thanks for listening. This is Heartstock Radio. And I'm Carol Murphy. Thanks for listening to Heartstock. Today we're speaking with Cassandra Washington. And the call-in number, we're going to open the phone lines now. So the call-in number is 406-533-5785. And we really want to talk about now some very interesting work by Richard Wilkerson and Kate Pickett. They did a research paper, and eventually that evolved into a book called The Spirit Level. And it's a work that really examines from a scientific statistical standpoint what happens in societies when there is a large income gap or inequality that exists. So statistically speaking, our income gap here in the United States is growing. We know this to be a fact. It's, you know, hard facts and data that basically prove that out. And I wanted to get a little bit of your take, Cassandra, on some of their work that basically says, if we have larger income gaps in society, you know, just within the society, say, for example, the United States, if that income gap gets larger, there is a simultaneous rise in some very negative statistics and data also. For example, mental and physical illness rises, as does teen pregnancies, levels of addiction. What's your take on that?
Well, I think like you, I think it's a fascinating research, right? And it feels true. Like I haven't studied that. You know, I'll read more about the spirit. What is it? The spirit level?
Yes, that's the book.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you can also find some of their scientific journal papers also.
It seems true. And I saw that the U.S. and the U.K. have the largest unequals, right? Like, and how they look at the lowest 20% of the population and the highest 20% income-wise, and that gap, and how it does affect mental illness and health, and that, yeah, but which makes it more important. Like, I'm just starting with the conversation. Can we have a conversation about our inequalities and what we can do to mitigate those? Because it not only affects, you know, people that are poor, it affects a large proportion of the population.
Yes, and that's what I found so interesting, is that those negative effects don't hold true just for that segment of the population who is at the bottom of the income level. It holds true, that statistical data holds true across all people within that society. So my take on it, it goes back to kind of some of the spiritual principles that we've talked about previously on the program, is that we really are all connected. So if one group is suffering or held at the bottom or just is at the bottom, period, then those negative ramifications are felt throughout all classes of that society. And I just find it really interesting that science can prove that.
Yeah, I bet. But, you know, I often hear people say your wealth is your health, right? And I heard someone recently say you can't have wealth without health. And it just reminds me of, until we address some of the inequalities that we have in our country and in our world, we can't live wealthy and healthy as a country, right? Or as communities. So it really behooves us to have these discussions about inequality, about racial and gender differences, and to advocate and to brainstorm and think of solutions and implement those instead of looking for ways to divide us even more.
Yeah. It's in all of our best interest to sit down and open the conversation, for sure. Once again, our call-in number is 406-533-5785, and you're listening to Heartstock. So we talked about this a little bit before, but what do you think are the greatest challenges that women and women of color are currently facing, and what kind of skills do we need? I mean, I know a lot of my friends and people that I encounter, they're just kind of at a loss other than just being upset or distraught. What ought we to be doing?
That's a great question. That's a big question too. When you think, what's the greatest challenge? And so I thought, I'm not sure what the greatest challenge is, but I can speak to one challenge that I address in my coaching, and that is worthiness. And it's an issue that's not just isolated to women of color, and we spoke about it earlier. I feel it certainly impacts our community, is our worthiness, our self-worth. And although I was raised to be confident, that I wasn't less than anyone else or better than anyone else, I still struggled with self-worth. You know, I had this feelings of unworthiness and at times feelings of arrogance that I think that's that inner development that we need to do, that we're called to do, that inner development, so that we can show up externally and really solve some of the issues, the inequalities that we're talking about. So I would start there. I would start, it's in brown people, it's in white people, lots of different racial and gender, all the spectrums, right? This feeling of unworthiness. And it's us trying to measure up. I think it comes from the research that they did, this inequality. You never want to be seen in your community, in your society, as not equal, all right? It's, you don't feel worthy or you feel unworthy. I think it's related to that research. Mm-hmm. I'll have to read more. But that.
Yes, and the point that different is not necessarily less. I think that that is really, really a strong point, because as children growing up and going to school, you know, all of the interactions, of course we are different. We try so hard to fit in and be the same as everybody else. But the inevitable conclusion is that, hey, I really am different, but not to necessarily equate that as being less than.
Being less.
Yeah.
Even in a world that can kind of point that out, that you're less, right?
Exactly.
Absolutely. It's the everyone's not like me and I'm not like everyone. And that is okay. Like, it's the acceptance that different is not less and different is okay. Yeah, and actually, you know, I can contribute something through it. It's valuable. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. That's the whole point, is that that's where our strength as a collective unit comes from, is in our diversity, because that's how we grow on that cutting edge, and that's how innovation happens. Hey, I've got a different idea. Let's try that. How can we fix it? How can we make it better? How can we implement it? And all of our different perspectives and skill sets, you know, whatever we came into the planet with or acquired along the way, that's what gives us strength. So we've come to the end. Well, maybe the end is too strong of a word. The program has come to a conclusion. So how might people get in touch with you, Cassandra?
I'd love to, you know, continue this conversation. You know, I have a program called Real Dialogue where we do just this. We have these conversations across our differences on complicated issues that impact our lives. And so they can find me at CassandraWashington.com. And there's a lot about what I do there. There's also a way to contact me there. I'm on social media too, so they can find me on Facebook and LinkedIn and Instagram. So I'd love to engage with people more about conversations like this.
Thank you so much. And I'm really glad that we had you come back so that we could really finish our conversation.
This is, I love it. Thank you so much.
Me too. This is Heartstock Radio. Thanks for listening. I'm Carol Murphy. See you next week. Bye-bye.
Heartstock Radio is a production of KBFM 102.5 Butte America Radio. Hear our live programs every Wednesday at 7 p.m. Mountain Standard Time via live stream at butteamericaradio.org.